Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 2013 has been a good year for Tegan and Sarah Quinn, the identical twin sisters who lead the band Tegan and Sarah. Their seventh studio album, called Heartthrob, premiered at number 3 on the Billboard 200 chart. And we learned recently that Tegan and Sarah made the shortlist for the Polaris Music Prize in the duo's native Canada. Tegan and Sarah are here in the Soundcheck studio, and they're going to start us off with a version of their song, I Was a Fool.
Do you remember I searched you out? Come your city's walls. Do you remember me as the vow? How I prayed for your cause. I stood still. It's what I did. Love like ours has never fails. Well, I stuck around. Well, I did behave. I sued you every time. I was a fool. Then you blame me and block me out. How long did you think I'd last? Then you disappear for weeks to pout. How many times could I pass?
I Was a Fool, from Tegan and Sarah. You'll find it on their new album, Heartthrob. That was a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Tegan Quinn singing and playing a neat little, and I do mean little, acoustic
very
guitar.
Very little, yeah.
Sarah Quinn singing and actually playing a very small keyboard as well. John Spence at our big old grand piano. Ted Gowans playing electric guitar. We were talking before going on the air today about power ballads, and do you guys see that song as a power ballad?
Yeah, this version of it is perhaps maybe not quite so power ballady, but on the record, it's definitely, you know, opens with that piano, and when I wrote the song, I just recorded acoustic guitar and that piano part, basically, that was pretty much it, and then left an empty sort of eight bars in the middle. Sarah wrote the bridge, and I was kind of, we were leaning more towards more electronic and kind of like sort of synth sounding songs, more upbeat. So I didn't even know that that song would get picked, but Greg Kirsten, who ended up producing the bulk of our new record, Heartthrob, it was one of his favorites right off the bat. So when we got into the studio, I was clear that I hoped that it didn't remain acoustic and simple like that. I wanted it to really kind of cross over. I'd imagined it for some like big pop star, like a Rihanna or something, really like, you know, kind of making it a dramatic, intense song or whatever. And we threw out the reference of Roxette, actually. And before we knew it, he was, you know, kind of creating this incredible sort of track around this song that started out as just like a sort of simple acoustic song. So now it's a power ballad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of things I want to follow up on there. One was Tegan. You said you wrote the song at first, and then Sarah, you wrote the bridge. So this kind of collaborative songwriting, this is still a relatively new process for the two of you, right?
I mean, I think that we've started to sort of branch out a little bit more into our own music. I mean, we've certainly collaborated in the past, especially when we're working with other artists. You know, we've done top line writing for other artists and electronic music collaborations, like with Tiesto and David Guetta, right, and that sort of thing. But yeah, with our own music, I think that we sort of have been I've been more protective over our independent songwriting status. And I think that we always saw it as being like one of the kind of neat hooks of our band was that we didn't do a lot of collaborating and that there was this sort of cohesion that had to happen in the studio. So, but with this record and even on previous albums, I think that we've been a little bit more inclusive and we'll like let each other into the songwriting process a little earlier than we have before. And Tegan was especially generous and let me write a lot on her songs for this record, actually.
Well, now you've gone to the other question I wanted to follow up on, which is the idea that the two of you also write for other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How different is the songwriting process when you know that its first intent is not for the two of you, but for someone else?
I think there's a little less stress initially when you start writing for someone else because you are working within the template and the boundaries that they are setting by the music that they're creating initially. So oftentimes when we collaborate, a track is sent to us first and, you know, like the track will get re-recorded or added to or adjusted or rearranged throughout the process. But when you first get their idea, it's their idea. So I feel like I feel less stress when I begin a song with someone
else. Which is so
else.
Funny because I feel like it's the opposite.
It's entirely
opposite for me. Like when Tegan and I are writing for our own music or our own albums, I generally feel very little stress because I think to myself, well, you know, we'll just write until we get all the material we need. Whereas when somebody sends us a track, I'm like, I'm almost immediately aware of the chance of failure. Like,
well, and I want to be clear that, I mean, I feel intense pressure when I'm writing with someone else because I do want them to like it and I want them to choose what I've created. But I guess when I mean stress, when I sit down just to start, like the other day I had a day off and for the first time in forever I was like, I'm going to bring my guitar upstairs and I'm going to set up my Logic stuff and I'm going to actually like record. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there with this guitar in my hands being like, I could go anywhere, any direction, any type of song. I could write about anything I want. And sometimes that's where the stress comes from, is just this sort of incredible, like, I mean, this infinite amount of options, right, that are in front of me. Whereas if you sent me a track tomorrow, you've already given me limited me to a certain type of song. So I just, it's a good exercise, I think, for an artist. I encourage young artists out there to collaborate with each other all the time. Bands constantly come to us for advice, young artists, aspiring artists, singers, writers, etc. And I always say now, like, the best thing you can do is go and collaborate with someone else because you are broadening your horizon right away. Instantly, you are learning from someone else. And I think that that's the best way to become a good writer.
Well, and you know, you look at the example of Lennon and McCartney, this great songwriting partnership, mm-hmm, where, you know, you had two very different, you know, you can always tell a John song from a Paul song.
Yeah.
Except for when you can't.
Right.
So what they did for each other was really what made the Beatles,
yeah,
you know, so incredible. So how is it, you know, this time around with Heartthrob, you know, writing in a more collaborative way? Do you find you're sort of tempering each other?
Well, it's our most successful record, so maybe we were mistaken all these years that we were holding out. Maybe we should have written together sooner.
There's something sort of like creatively frustrating for me, that in the compromise, we've ended up having so much more success. You know, you, of course, stubbornly think that it'll be your song or it'll be your vision that ultimately pushes you forward. And I think that over the years, I've realized that that was fairly, Like, that's not true. Mm-hmm. Tegan and I, probably our most successful moments have come when we were probably both stubbornly moving towards the middle, you know. And that sort of compromise has created some of our strongest work, probably.
We're speaking with Tegan and Sarah. The new album out is called Heartthrob. Sarah, you used the word compromise twice there. That's, you know, some people see that as a dirty word. Did you have to kind of make your peace with the idea of compromise? Well,
this is the funny thing. Like, I think Tegan and I, what makes us really strong leaders and what makes us really successful business people in our world is that we are really collaborative, and we love to work with other people, and we have longstanding relationships with people in our team, from managers to our, you know, creative people, musicians. Ted Gowans, who's playing with us right now, 10 years, you know, we've been with him. So I think that that's actually one of our strongest, characteristics, that we can work well with other people, and yet we have had a very difficult time working with each other, like, you know, in that way. And so it's interesting, because I do feel that there is this sort of sacred ground for me in our career where I do get to do this one thing alone, one thing that I get to go into, like, a space by myself and work on music, and I don't have to listen to Tegan or ask for her advice or her feedback. And yet here we are now, like Tegan said, having our most sort of successful time in our career, and it probably came from maybe letting our guard down a little bit with each other.
So this wasn't an accident, Tegan. It was the idea you set out to kind of make inroads into the pop world.
Absolutely. I mean, when we sat down to work on Heartthrob, you know, it was like a year of our life, and the first, like, you know, dozen songs that came out were actually songs that I wrote, and it wasn't that they weren't good, but I think that, you know, we were definitely not 100% sure of which direction to go in, and it was a few really amazing sort of fateful meetings that we had with some new people who were running our record company that really inspired Sarah and I to actually sit down and write a list of what we actually really wanted to achieve. You know, when we signed our record deal, we were 19 years old. We'd started playing music right out of high school, almost to fill time, because we didn't know what we wanted to do with our lives. We didn't want to go to university. And we jokingly have filled 14 years full of stories about how we just don't know what we're going to do next. People are always like, you know, is this what you wanted to do when you were kids? And we really didn't want to do this when we were kids. And we really didn't, through our 20s, necessarily say, this is our path, this is what we're supposed to do, you know, this is where we're going, and here's what we want to accomplish. And at 32 years old, we were pushed by our record company to say, like, what do you want to be? Do you want to be an indie band? Do you want to be a cult band? Do you want to make folk records? Do you want to just write for other people? Like, where are you going? Like, they were new to the whole fold, and they were actually just asking us those questions. I'm sure they were asking everyone those questions. They just wanted to know what kind of band we thought we were. And out came spilling these tales of, like, all this hard work that we had put into our career and these struggles we had endured, and, you know, fighting for equality for women and on pop radio, and, like, how many years we had struggled opening for big rock bands and seeing bands that we didn't think were necessarily as deserving, like, just achieving success. And all of a sudden I was like, why are we holding ourselves back? Like, why are we limiting ourselves? And as we started to put together this list of things that we wanted to accomplish, it became very obvious that even musically we had been holding ourselves back too. It wasn't just on the business side. And that musically we really did feel like we could be a bigger band. And we had been told over and over again songs like Back in Your Head and Alligator and a lot of our record, The Con, actually, people were like, if it had just, you know, been pushed a little bit further, you know, those would have been potentially radio-friendly songs. And we'd always just said, no, there's no room for us on radio. We're different. We're girls. We write our own songs. Nobody wants that. No one wants that. And all of a sudden, we didn't care anymore. We were, like, shrugged off all that insecurity. And I was like, I want to change the way that mainstream radio looks. I want to change the way that mainstream music looks. I want to get things like SNL. I want to get on the Ellen show. I want to tour and play really big venues. And I don't want to compromise. I want to just go for it. And still have integrity in our music. And Sarah was on board for that, too. She was really pushing for a pop record anyway. So it was kind of, you know.
Well, it's not a pop record if it doesn't have a single.
Right.
And you guys certainly have a single with Closer. Mm-hmm. You wanna play that for
Absolutely.
Us next?
Yeah, sure.
Speaking with Tegan and Sarah Quinn, the band Tegan and Sarah. Performing tonight and tomorrow night, two sold-out shows here in New York at the Hudson River Park's Pier 26. There are tickets available for Thursday night's benefit concert for HRC in Huntington, Long Island at the Paramount Theater. Then they're off to Boston and Portland. Playing for us here today in the Soundcheck studio, this song is the single, Closer.
Closer.
windows are open, the wind is really blowing. Night sky is changing overhead. It's time to just stop physical. And the time to get all so critical. So let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical. Underneath me, here comes the heat. Before we meet, a little bit closer. Here comes the spark. Before the dark, come a little closer. The lights are off and the sun is finally setting. Night sky is changing overhead. It's not just our physical. My time to get all so critical. So let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical. I want you close, I want you. I won't treat you like you're typical. I want you close, I want you. I won't treat you like you're typical.
Tegan and Sarah with Closer. That is the single from their current album, Heartthrob. Tegan and Sarah and the band playing for us live here in the Soundcheck studio. Why don't we move on to another song? They'll give us a version of I'm Not Your Hero. Once again, it's Tegan and Sarah live on Soundcheck.
Standing where I am now, standing up at all. I was used to feeling like I was never gonna see myself at the finish line. Hanging on to parts of me, hanging on at all. I was used to seeing no future in my sight. Sometimes it feels like they wanna remind me, send all those villains after me. I'm not their hero, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't brave. I never walked the party line, doesn't mean that I was never afraid. I'm not your hero, but that doesn't mean we're not one in the same. I was used to standing in the shadow of a damaged heart. Learning all I know now, losing all I did. I never used to feel like I'd be standing so far ahead.
sometimes it feels what I recovered you lost. Sending your peaceful arms to me. I'm not the hero, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't brave. I never walked the party line, doesn't mean that I was never afraid. I'm not your hero, but that doesn't mean we're not one in the same. Sometimes it feels like the side that I'm on plays the toughest hand, holds the longest stand. Sometimes it feels like I'm all that they've got. It's so hard to know I'm not what they want. Sometimes it feels like the side that I'm on plays the toughest hand, holds the longest stand. Sometimes it feels like I'm all that they've got. It's so hard to know.
Tegan and Sarah, live on Soundcheck with I'm Not Your Hero. Once again, Tegan Quinn singing and playing that little guitar, Sarah Quinn singing, playing a bit of keyboard, and Ted Gowans on guitar, John Spence playing piano and more keyboards. Tegan, Sarah, you guys have obviously a wide global fan base, and currently your fans are threatening to break the internet. Rachel, listening in from the UK, writes, "Come to Newcastle, England," all in caps, "you guys rock."
Thank you.
Gracia from Mexico wants to know when you're coming to Mexico. Claudia from Poland wants to know when you're coming to Poland. Timothy from Lansing, Michigan wants to know when you're coming to Poland as well. No, I'm kidding. He wants you to come to Lansing, Michigan. And then Deneve from Vancouver wants to know, what influences your fashion?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, the thought that I have almost every single day is just how not to go out looking terribly. I mean, I know that sounds so crazy, but I think, you know, before the internet and before the sort of like wide access to digital, you know, cameras, phones, whatever it was, I just didn't think as much about it. I mean, I cared about fashion and I certainly put effort in, but in a totally different way than I do now. I'm like incredibly aware of how images, the second somebody takes a photo, they're being tumbled, they're up on people's Facebook pages, they're on Twitter. And there's, you know, to deny that I'm not, you know, now sort of like, I don't know, inspired by how vain I've become, you know, like I just sort of like, I can't deny it.
It could be seen as being vain, but it also just, you get self-conscious. Like, you know, like people take millions of photos and then you see this like horrible one of yourself and you're like, oh my God, it's like, imagine your worst day. And now imagine a million photos of you on that day. So we're very motivated now by trying to look halfway decent. So,
you know. Okay. Speaking of bad days, I had one for a moment there. It's not Deneve, it's Denise. I can't read my own writing.
Oh, wow.
Denise from Vancouver, there's the answer to your question. But is there, I mean, is there someone you follow? Is there a designer? Or,
I think we're tapped into what's happening. You know, I mean, I look at, you know, I look at runway shows. I read magazines. You know, I'm aware of like sort of like what's, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Montreal and New York. So, I mean, it's just as simple as seeing people out on the street and thinking, oh, I could do that or I could pull that off or, you know, so I think it's a little bit trial and error. I'm desperately, you know, trying to appear like I'm not trying too hard, but also I don't want to look like I'm like, you know, nothing against my father, but like I have to admire the man. He wore baggy sweatpants and stretched out T-shirts and, you know, holy shoes and looked like a bit of a bum our whole lives. And he really truly had no self confidence issues. You know, he went out looking like that,
I think
you know, Tegan and I probably didn't get that. You know, we do definitely try to put ourselves together, and we do look at those around us. And there's lots of artists I really admire for looking trailblazing. You know, I'm thinking about Grimes right now, for example. Mm-hmm. She's someone who every time I see her dressed up in something, I think, like, if I was wearing that.
Or Emily from Metric. I mean, she's she just looks effortlessly good all the time.
Yeah.
Emily Haynes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. You know, I just think of, like, it all goes back to Bowie.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, we grew up, I mean, our parents were a very strong influence on us, and we grew up with a very musical household, everything from Bruce Springsteen to Bowie to Cyndi Lauper. So we definitely, when we hit our teenage years, we experimented intensely with fashion. And
that's
sometimes
what, that is a way to describe
yeah, sometimes
what happened.
not very efficiently or effectively, but and we also say that we would take, if we ever could, we would just, like, turn off the internet just for a minute, just to restart, you know, just to erase that first decade of our career right off the web.
We're speaking with Tegan and Sarah here in the Soundcheck studio. Now, one of the things we're doing this week is we're asking, you know, various guests, our listeners, to tell us about a song or an album that they missed first time around and came to later and really fell in love with. Mm-hmm. Has that happened with the two of you?
Yes.
Sari, why don't you go first?
It's sort of a little bit of an embarrassing story because, you know, we were fairly tapped in what was happening with music, especially in the late 90s, mid 90s. You know, that was a real heyday for us in our teen years. One of our first major tours in North America was with Ryan Adams. And we got talking one night and he asked us if we were aware of a band called The Replacements. And I had never heard of them before. And he actually ended up gifting us the whole discography, and specifically Let It Be really resonated with me. And I just couldn't believe, like, I mean, this is like music that I couldn't believe that I had never heard it before and that it could
resonate. But in your defense,
so
weren't you like 4 or 5 years old?
I totally was. But even in my teen years, I did miss it for sure the first time, based on the fact that I had been just born. But then I missed it again, I think, when I became interested in that type of music. I said I wouldn't admit this, but the truth is that there's the song Androgynous on the record, right? Androgynous. I did know that song, except I knew it from the Crash Test Dummies because they had covered it and put it on their record.
Okay.
And so I remember hearing Let It Be and hearing that song and thinking, like, oh my God, the Crash Test Dummies didn't write this song. Like, you know, just like real sort of naive, like out of touch Canadian suburban accident.
Well, let's make up for lost time. Here's Sarah's pick, The Replacements.
Here comes Dick, he's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane, you know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, evolution, same build, evolution. Tomorrow who's gonna fuss? And they love each other so androgynous. Closer than you know, love each other so androgynous.
That is The Replacements and Androgynous from the album Let It Be. Sarah missed that one first and second time around, came to it late, fell in love with it. Tegan, what about you?
Well, I have a very similar story, obviously, growing up similarly to Sarah. We had a musical background growing up, and when we became teenagers, we got really into the punk rock and sort of, like, you know, indie rock scene in Calgary. My mom would drop us off at gigs on the weekend, and we became obsessed with this Calgary band called Red Autumn Fall. And the lead singer, Simeon Ross, to this day, I still think he's like a handsome, handsome devil with a wonderful voice. But I remember I was probably 18 or 19 stumbling upon the Smiths' record, The Queen Is Dead, and thinking to myself, these people sound just like Red Autumn Fall. But not thinking like, oh, Red Autumn Fall must have been ripping off the Smiths. I thought I had discovered a new band. And of course, to my horror, finding out it came out in like the early, I think it was 86 or 85 or something like that, the record came out. But fantastic record. And in my defense, I will say it wasn't like missing Bowie or something. I mean, my parents were very cool and hip, and we grew up listening to a lot of really amazing music. But I think the Smiths, maybe they just missed that a little bit. It was a little younger for them. So, And I feel so excited because I got to, like, learn about a band that had, you know, an incredible discography, and of course then started following Morrissey religiously as well. So
But you thought they were taking a page out of
Red on Fall. I was like, poor Red on Fall. No wonder they were never successful. This band, the Smiths, stole their sound.
Well, let's hear a little bit. There is a light that never goes out. The name of the biography of the Smiths that came out. Yeah,
okay.
It came out last year, and the name of this song from that album by the Smiths, "The Queen Is Dead."
Where there's music and there's people and the young and the alive. Driving in your car, I never, never want to go home, because I haven't got one anymore. Take me out tonight, I want to see people and I want to see life. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, because it's not my home, it's their home, and I'm welcome no more. And if a double-decker bus crashes in, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And if a ten-ton truck kills the both of us, to die by your side.
You know, there is a real skill to making death by 10-ton truck.
I was just thinking this. I was like,
sound that musical and romantic and poetic.
There's no denying there's something very special about him as a lyricist. It's just incredible.
The Smiths featuring Morrissey and the album The Queen Is Dead from 1986. And Tegan and Sarah sharing some of their Missed It Then, Love It Now recordings with us on Soundcheck today. I'm going to give the last word to yet another listener who wrote in, but we're going to withhold this person's name. Listening in from work, one earphone in, the other ear paying attention to students taking a practice SAT test. Can't resist listening to Tegan and Sarah live.
Aww.
Now, you guys just finished a European tour, right?
We did, yes.
Lots of people have had that chance, and now touring on your own and with fun.
Yeah, we're with fun. Well, we do New York the next couple nights, and we're on our own for a couple weeks, and then we meet up again with fun at Red Rocks, and we're excited in the middle of August, and we will get back to Europe. To all of our European listeners here, we are planning to come back probably a few times on this record, and lots of touring planned. We'll be touring till next summer, I think. So,
alrighty, that gap year has turned into a gap decade and a half for Tegan and Sarah. Playing tonight and tomorrow, sold-out shows at Hudson River Park's Pier 26, Thursday night on Long Island at the Paramount in Huntington, then on to Boston and Portland. Tegan, Sarah, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you very much.
This is Soundcheck.
Goodbye, I don't wanna feel the need.